And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence from here to Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the BEA beautiful studios of Phoenix.com, Kenneth Scorgin, Jr., finance columnist, economist, and historian. As an historian in his primary field of study and an investor in the real world, Kenneth has a keen perspective on all facets of the financial world. All facets? We'll find out. He has owned his own business and corporation, has been an investor in many different markets such as securities and real estate, currency trading, international trust. His desire is to provide you with the true understanding of the markets and the economy and to give you the information that will help you make your own decisions in these troubling and quite often fascinating times regarding your economic decisions. Kenneth is not a certified financial advisor, and his only goal is to give you true information by which you can see things as they happen, and in many cases, before they happen. Now, he's got a degree in history and a minor in political science and this kind of other, but how we know him is the Daily Economist, thedailyeconomist.com. It's great to have him on the show this hour, you know, because who we have on in the first hour? Mr. Doug Casey. So there, people going to listen to this show, they're going to be getting them some Ken Scorgin. You know, help me out, Ken. I want to make sure I get your name right, because if I don't do that, that'd be bad. So go ahead and say your name for me, would you please?
Yeah, it's Scorgin, like the shoreline, and then J-E-N. So the T is silent, but no worries.
Scorgin. Now yeah, I know. Ken Scorgin Jr. Boom. Done. All right. So now this is, if you're going to be a daily economist, what are you, some of the things that you daily follow? Is it big news? Are you always keeping track of something? Go ahead and tell us about what you do.
Yeah, I pretty much keep track of everything, including geopolitics, finance, economics, cryptocurrencies, gold and silver, pretty much anything across the board. Like I said, my primary thing is economics, because economics is a social science. It's not a mathematical science like finance is. And so with that being said, it can affect every single bit of society, from your family to the way legislation is passed at your local level to the way you interact with somebody at a retail store. It just encompasses everything. And so what's going on primarily now when you take a look is the world is moving back the same way it did 100 years ago. The rise of nationalism and populism, and that has a much different economic effect than it does when we had between 2008 and 2016 before populism rose, and we're seeing this in what Trump is doing with tariffs, etc. So these things all are interacting, and they don't necessarily have to do anything with the stock market or the bond market or that, except those are all just the tools that are used to facilitate all the changes going on economically.
Well, you're saying, you're kind of giving me the impression economics is the beginning of a culture or part of it, or it's a result of a culture. I mean, when you're talking about what you look at and how money's moving or the value of, or I mean, I need to know how they're, certainly when you're forecasting or predicting what you're going to do with your money, what's your focus? Is it philosophy? Is it economics? Is it taxes? Is it country? And this nationalism thing, it's kind of it's a weapon used against us as individuals. They want to herd us into little groups and then pit us against each other and and volunteer to referee or something? I mean, you know, it, you know, what are you looking at?
Well, we're seeing the backlash. We're seeing the backlash of globalism. You know, globalism goes back to the 1990s with, well, it goes back to the Bush era, you know, the 1,000 points of light thing. But really, it started getting into full gear during Clinton's era with NAFTA and GATT and the offshoring of all our jobs, the bringing in China to the World Trade Organization, the globalization of pretty much everything, multinational corporations. We saw this under the end of the Bush 2 era and in well into Obama's era, where we tried to bring in TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPIP for Europe, where multinational corporations would be able to be above sovereign governments. And that's where most of the financial realm would take place. So with those, there's been a backlash. And people don't realize this backlash goes back to, of course, 2009, just following the 2008 financial crisis. What was the first thing? Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah.
That was a populist backlash to globalism and to the financial system. That was followed then by the Tea Party movement. That was followed then by the Ron Paul revolution. And now it's culminating in the Trump, who is the ultimate, at least in the 21st century, the ultimate populist president.
Okay, now let's go in the order here. I think it was like, you had the Ron Paul revolution, which you're heavily involved in. You have the, then it went to the financial crisis, you know, kind of started hitting. And then, you know, the Tea Party was right then, you know, 9-10, you know, going into that, kind of they, you know, took that over. Then you have Occupy and the social justice stuff, and it's still going on. And so the nationalism that you're talking about, or the people in the streets thing, a lot of that is just manufactured. How real? How deep is that?
Oh, no, a lot of it's real. Okay, the manufactured is where you have the instances where they try to capitalize on it. But the populist movement, okay, you know, 100 years ago, the primary reason behind what led to World War One, of course, was in Serbia. Serbia was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and a group of Serbians, you know, desperately wanted independence. And so they concocted this idea to assassinate the Archduke Ferdinand. That didn't fully bring into the World War One, but it was a catalyst to do it. What really did it, of course, was that Serbia was backed by Russia, Germany backed Austria-Hungary, and when Russia started mobilizing, Germany started mobilizing, and it just everything started spinning out of control. What ended up happening is the end of World War One brought the end of three empires, or actually four. It ended the German Empire of Frederick the Great, it ended the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it ended the Ottoman Turkey Empire, and of course, with the Russian Revolution, it ended the Russian Empire. And it brought about all these new nation states. This is where Iran, Iraq, Syria, Palestine really came out from underneath the Ottoman Empire and became nation states. Also, of course, Hungary, Poland. I mean, it was just the nationalist movement. So there are, if you look in history, the second decade of every century pretty much is a populist movement. What the results are, though, the consequences of that aren't necessarily good. During the 1800s, you had the Napoleonic. You had the French Revolution, which led then to Napoleon. You had then in the 20th century, of course, World War One, which then led to the creation of some good nations leadership, some changes. However, you also got the Hitlers, the Stalins, and the Mussolinis. So what we're going through that right now, Germany is going through. We saw Merkel barely squeak by. We saw Austria bring in a 31-year-old Trump candidate. We see Poland with a new Trump candidate billionaire. These are populist leaders who are anti-EU, anti-globalism, and of course with Italy, or Italy just had elections for their nationalist movement.
Oh, Italy, we got to talk about Italy. I've been paying attention. We have a friend there, an attorney that has, you know, offices in Spain, Germany, and Rome, and it's just, we get a lot of input there, but it's a populist thing. It's a people thing, and that was, yep. I remember a couple of years ago at Bilderberg, you're going, man, we got to deal with this populist thing. Brexit, Trump, you know, the precariat is rising up. More. Crimes of the Crown by Captain Mark. The crown casts the world in shadow and claims to be our guiding light. Cowards clamor for security from boogeymen and ghost stories. While I say these hobgoblins are imaginary, I say those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. I say there is freedom in the black, and that's exactly where we intend to go. The crown banishes its own officers for exposing its crimes and tortures dissidents to the brink of madness. It dominates the globe and swallows the wealth of generations, leaving only blood and excrement. The crown calls it piracy to explore frontiers beyond its grasp. So the time has come for us to define the conduct among pirates. I say the crown has trampled our necks long enough. Need decentralized solutions to centralized problems? Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels? Or just want some swag to let the crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. We won't be hard to find.
On Free Talk Live.
Oh yeah, pirates. Piratswithoutborders.com. Check it out, man. We're all on the same page. Going whip ass. Decentralization of everything. You know, this one thing, I remember there was a writer, he's an activist in the Libertarian Party, a guy named Starchild. He made a big deal one year about nationalism. And he's going, this is a, I can see where this is going. He's going, he's a, you know, sex worker out of San Francisco, and you wouldn't think he'd, you know, have a deep thought, but he's a really good libertarian activist and thinks it deep. And he's going, I see what's coming with this nationalism thing. It was a few years ago, and it got my attention, and I started looking throughout history and seeing what was happening and the predictability of course, they got to go to nationalism. It's, they need a mushroom cloud, or they need an Olympics, or we got more gold medals, or our aircraft carrier's bigger than yours, or something that, you know, Team Merca. And I can see that as a weapon used against us to get us to rally around supporting a state that's devouring everything. And I'm just, you know, and that's kind of what Brexit was and Trump, and it's a populism against the status quo is one aspect of it. But if you can be against a status quo or whatever, but still pledge allegiance and stand for the freaking flag, well, then, you know, we still got you. And I see this nationalism. That's what the rise of Hitler and the motherland, Stalin, and we got mothers and fatherlands, and everybody's never my land. Okay. So this mindset, we were talking to Doug Casey about China and how the culture is so different that they already know the state sucks and they don't feel any allegiance. They got to pay taxes to anybody. They just do whatever they got to do, but they don't be under any illusion. They think the government's good. So this mindset is what's going to screw us. And I'm wanting you to kind of give your gist on how you think this is going to play out. Because the most we have on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix right now, your most recent gold, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency report. So this is a, when you do say daily, do you do a daily video?
Yeah, what I do is I alternate. The first one, say like on Monday, I'll do finance and economics. On Tuesday, gold, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency report. And then I do wash, rinse, repeat about 6 days a week.
Okay. So we'll go ahead and
you can pull any direction at all. What I wanted to do, I guess, once we got going on the first segment was lay out really the foundation of why a lot of the things we're seeing is going on. It leads into the reason for the tariffs.
No, I'm hit, man.
And all that.
No, it's just nationalism because we're in control.
You're dead right, because nationalism, it's all about who is the one in control. Who's the one leading the nationalism? Go back to the Iraq War. Bush. He said...
All right, here we're coming back. Let's talk about it on air. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Ken Jorgen! Oh, the Daily Economist! .com. All right, let me tell you what's going on. We have on the front page of Freedom Speaks right now, we got the most recent one they did yesterday. The Daily Economist update for March 8th, 2018, gold, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency report. So I guess this is a regular thing that you do is, you know, talking about gold, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. Why?
Well, because it's real money, or it's sound money, or it's an attempt to go against the system, the current fiat currency system. It's, you know, a lot of times throughout history, there have been attempts to rebel or break away from the dominant sovereign system of currency control. Some of them have worked in the past. Some of them have not. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons that cryptocurrencies really started growing was because they have complete manipulation, at least in the West, over the gold and silver. And all you have to do is look back to a...
has manipulation? Because I brought that up with Doug, you know, just a couple hours ago, and he goes, it's ridiculous. The price mail always, you know, I guess he means it always finds its balance in some way, sort of someday or something. I'm not sure what he meant, but I'm going, I don't know, man. I feel a lot of manipulation going on. Tell me what you think. You know, how is it manipulated?
After the petrodollar agreement was passed in 1973, one of the WikiLeaks, or it was either the WikiLeaks revelations, some of the documents, or it was some of the late last year, the CIA documents that were declassified. And the CIA documents said that the United States will create, through the futures market, the ability to control the price of gold and silver, both as a means to dissuade people from investing in precious metals and to also control the price to protect the dollar, the petrodollar.
No, so, they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong.
Oh, of course. But that's one of the reasons why they closed the gold window to begin with. So with that being said, the futures market, the paper market, is where the spot price of gold is set, at least in the West.
Yeah, see, this is one thing that let me tell you how you turn gold into paper. You do this futures thing, and it's just, it's been so obvious what's happening, but here comes cryptocurrency. Bitcoin, you know what it's worth, it's what somebody will pay for it, but then you have, you know, the hedge funds and banks, and because it has such a small market cap, they can influence that too. They're doing it now. So you know, in the end, it's kind of like what Doug's saying, Doug Casey, CaseyResearch.com, throw that in there because we're, you know, just talking about him. But, you know, what happens is he's going, look, in the end, the people, the market trumps, for lack of a better word, all this other stuff. Are you of that opinion, or can they continue the manipulation forever?
You can, but I'm reminded of something Benjamin Franklin said to a woman immediately after they came out of the Constitutional Convention.
You can keep it, yeah.
And that's just it. The reason we have gotten to the point we are today is because people as a whole are more, you know, it's like this. I'll give you the reason. Why are retirement funds, 401ks, mutual funds so popular? Because people don't want to take responsibility for their own financial wherewithal.
And
they're more than willing to give it to somebody for a promise in the future of a return in retirement.
And it's where they go. Everybody all in? Y'all in? It's ours now. Thank you for playing.
Yeah. That's the greatest scam in the world, because Wall Street now has access for 30 to 40 years of all this money. Because most people don't bother to look at what they're investing in. They don't question their broker.
Oh, here's a good one. LibertyAdvisor.com. He's a financial planner here that to go and speak at the Dollar Vigilante thing, you know, Narcopoco, Berwick's deal. He was to go down there. They said he was forbidden to talk about crypto. Your financial advisor, you can't do it. He had to pay $17,000 or almost and give up his Series 7 license to be able to go give a speech about crypto. And he's a young 32-year-old financial, you know, super geeky brain guy out of Scottsdale with clients. What? He goes, screw you. This is not the future. I'm done. And it's all about being able to bring in IRAs and retirement money into crypto and have a custodian multi-sig of whatever the heck it is to be able to keep your value in crypto and not the dollar. Well, guess what the dollar is thinking? They don't like it, okay? They don't like it one little bit, but it's the same way they, them, those, and the elites do it. You know, they get their property, they pass it on, they do, you know, I just gave $19 billion because I love humanity, and I'm going to have BS. They're doing it to protect themselves and create this generational wealth that you get all kinds of tax breaks, you have to pay capital gains. I mean, this is happening with crypto right now, and the banking don't like it. So I'm like, where's this going to end? Who's going to, you know, fire first? What's going on?
Well, see, you got to look at it from a pragmatic point of view, okay? The problem with cryptocurrency, the cryptocurrency industry, is that you have a bunch of cryptocurrency evangelists. they're just trying. It's going to go to $1 million Bitcoin. It's going to do this, and they don't give any reasons or justification behind it. I look at it, when I do my Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, I don't have necessarily opinion yes for or against, because I don't like to tell people what they should invest in. I lay out what the options are, the pros and cons, and then I hope that they choose their own investment. Did you hear about the NSA white paper from 1995?
About what they wanted to do,
a mint?
How to make a mint
is what it's called.
Oh, is it crypto digital money they wanted to go to, that one?
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so that was in 1995. When Satoshi Nakamoto, the unknown guy, and that's something else. When I do my due diligence, I want to know who these people are. I don't want to invest in something just by some spurious, unknown, anonymous individual who has a million Bitcoin and has never cashed it in. So who holds it? The thing about it is that came out. Well, Nakamoto's white paper, you know when it came out? It came out just days
after
the stock market crashed in October. Yeah. Too much coincidence is going on. Most of the cryptocurrency that's being sold is being sold. 70% of it's traded in three countries: China, South Korea, Japan. They're the ones who are driving it. 1% of all the Bitcoin wallets out there own 99% of the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't matter if it's decentralized. If you own the majority of a given asset,
it is centralized.
You automatically control the price.
You know, when I look at crypto, these are all valid, you know, concerns and that was not what I focused on. You know, right. I'm going, okay, what are its traits? What are we looking at? Well, they promised me anonymity, cheap transaction fees, speed, you know, can't be censored, and all those keep dropping off. I mean, you know, it's not so anonymous, it's not so cheap, it's not so, but the concept has broken out. So this whole concept of I just get to be my own bank, I don't need a retina scan, I got half of the planet's not yet even online, satellite communication's coming up, Bezos is going to give everybody a cell phone as long as it opens up to Amazon or something. You're going to have the kids in the Congo doing commerce with the kids in Amazon, and I'm telling you, it's out of their control now. It demonstrated what can be done. Well, I'm looking for pirate money. I want my pirate currency. Give me some pirate money. Hailing frequencies invisible to the crown. Transactions invisible to the crown. Can we do this? What impact will it have when they do another Cyprus or haircut or bail-in and such? Crypto's going to keep, it's not going anywhere. It's just which one. We'll talk about it.
I love my...
Yeah, see, that's one thing. Yeah, I meant to get in. We ran out of time. Is that the crypto that... I'll give you an example. A local politician, she was a big Ron Paul Loveolution person, city councilwoman in a small community here. Well, because she's an elected official, you know, that was kind of in the freedom movement and knew me, they go to her and they go, oh, leader of you got elected and kind of we need you to help and convince Ernie to promote Bitcoin or cryptos being used to pay taxes in the state of Arizona. They think this is a big giant win and all, you know, it gives it legit and kind of, but I know the people that think that way. And I'm going, look, I'm not going to help you because they're going to make you pay taxes in crypto. Digital money is coming. They're going to be doing it and Big Brother and we get to see and do and approved and now it's on or off and you're not allowed. I'm going, I don't think you guys understand. They're going to use this technology and the goodwill built up around cryptocurrency as if it's anti-establishment. They're going to stamp it with an establishment code or whatever the hell they're going to do and make you do it. And I'm going, you just already going digital in India and all these other places. I'm going, you don't see what's coming.
True, but except you have to look at individual circumstances. Okay, I wrote an article a couple days ago about Wyoming. Wyoming is not only passing a law to... make gold and silver money legal tender, but they're also talking about making cryptocurrencies legal tender. What does that mean? That means that there's no capital gains tax on its use. Okay. Now that's at the state level. And see, when you were talking about the Arizona, that's what they're doing is they're removing taxation by making it legal tender at the state level.
But I tell you now, what, this is my concern.
They can't stop the federal, but they can do the state.
Yeah, no, this is my concern from the beginning. The fact that it's programmable money can make it. weaponize money. If you go to piratewithoutborders.com is our promotion, decentralization of everything. And, you know, Captain Mark is in Mark and Reprisal. Mark is the you know, Neo character, and Trinity is Reprisal character, blah, blah, blah. So we have a lot of fun with that. They have first and second and third and fourth and fifth letters of Captain Mark. The second letter is on cryptocurrency. And it says, we got to be careful. This can be weaponized money. This be just another link in the chain to the crown. And I'm going, what they're going, I guarantee. Now, how they get away with it and try and suppress competition and monopolize and the money and we're it and how they do that, and I don't know, don't care, because I don't think they're going to be able to. But what they're going to come out with, oh, yeah, this cryptocurrency is allowed and monopolized, and nobody else can do it in this legal tender, and we said, and you got to do this one. So when you go get your latte, when you go to Walmart, when you go to Amazon, when whatever you're in your credit card, you do it in crypto, they're going to have this one, and they're going to be able to tax the transaction at the transaction. It's going to split off, and every time I spend point whatever percent, goes straight into the government's coffers of whatever, which is very efficient for them. Don't need it, IRS. You know, that you can do away with the IRS and you just take your cut from my transaction. That's going to appeal to a lot of people, but they can always just turn the dial a little bit more up, a little bit more information. It came from this phone. This guy's doing this. So they love them some digital money. This is
well,
coming.
Here's the kicker, at least in that. When it comes to Bitcoin in its original form was supposed to be peer-to-peer. That would have left it anonymous, that would have left it encrypted, that would have left it decentralized. Every instance of where the problem comes in is these third-party conduits,
yep.
i.e. Bitcoin exchanges,
yep.
i.e. Credit card. You know, and if you think about it, you know, like the digital cards, I forget the name. It's not
okay,
Monix.
Let's pick this up.
Like,
we're coming back on air. I want to, you know, we can summarize, you know, what you're saying right there. All right, here we go.
Yep.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I turn on the tube, what do I see? A whole lot of people crying, don't blame me. They point the crooked little fingers at everybody else. Spend all the time feeling sorry for themselves. Think them of this, think them of that. Your mama's too thin and your daddy too fat.
Get over it!
Declare my independence. See how easy it was? And no government forms! Oh, who's another guy at the independence declaring kind of individual? Ken Shorgan. He's out there doing the dailyeconomist.com. You know, we're in off air, we're talking about, you know, the nature of cryptocurrencies. And I'm of the opinion that government loved in some digital money. Just ask India. They're going, ooh, and you're allowed and you're not allowed, and we can tax at the transaction. We don't need to do all the paperwork, no income tax, no forms. Everybody's going to love it. We're going to have the digital current dollar. We're going to be doing the, you know, the crypto dollar, and we're doing, and they approved and said and pay my taxes and everything, and I bought my bubble gum, and they go, and the taxes for that is, and it went straight to them. No muss, no fuss, but the man can just change that code. We got core development kind of, yeah, and we want a little bit more go over here at the, you know, it's just a code. Change this number. Hell, we'll do it for you automatically, live Ethernet right into your point of sale machine at the Dunkin' Donuts. Boom. They going to let, it's a coming. So is there money competition? Is there something else you can do? It's like bartering offline. That's not allowed. We got, you know, put you in jail. We got people on trial, you know, March 20th, it's going right here in Arizona, Morpheus, good friend, bam, boom, he's in, you know, money laundering. So I'm going, all right, so the nature of this, where things going, Ken, give us what for, man.
Yeah, one of the things, you know, the question, and I've been posing this question in a lot of articles and, of course, in a lot of my podcasts, we have the decentralized unbacked cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, we're going to kick out of there because that's the banker's coin. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, we knew. IOTA, that was such a, I'm like, why? You didn't even know. Never mind. You'll learn.
Anyway, with that being said, there's another type of cryptocurrency, that decentralized cryptocurrency that's coming about, and it's called resource-backed or the gold-backed cryptocurrencies. There is facilities out there for individuals to be able to function normally in their financial realm without having to use a bank. You have places like Gold Money out of London. You have gold-backed cryptocurrencies that are coming up like Digix DAO. But here's the problem. The problem isn't necessarily being able to do your regular, your bill pay or your retail with that. The problem is how, if you move to a gold-backed cryptocurrency system, how can you do capital for business growth? And that, of course, is being covered by things like crowdfunding and some of the business models that are coming out. As a matter of fact, Digix DAO is building its core business by having public audits of the gold, as well as insurance, just in case your crypto gets hacked, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that's insurance. Okay. Insurance. We do gold money. Peter Schiff comes on regularly, and we did the gold money thing, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and I just put a couple hundred and kind of it builds up. And I go get my gold, I can order it and whatever. But you can get, and I never even got the card, but I have friends or listeners that have. You get a Visa or a MasterCard, I can't remember. You know, I think it's a MasterCard. You get a credit card that lets you spend the gold that's in your account. And, of course, Peter will say, oh, yeah, and it's safe and it's there and they'll never take and they're not allowed. And so I'm going, yeah, I like having, my stuff and, hid where my time capsule in my safe, myself. But it's a really good mechanism by which you can have gold as the backed asset, spend it in grams on some Visa network. But what happens when the man puts the pressure on and the Visa says, no, WikiLeaks, you can't take it anymore. No, gold money, you can't use the network anymore. That's the problem.
You're going by the premise that things in this world are not perfect and they don't change. You know what? There is no guarantees in life. You can only do and set yourself up for the best possible course, judging by the way the future is going. Anything can be regulated. You know, it's the power, as Mao said, power derives from the barrel of a gun. Even Dud Casey uses that quote.
Oh, yeah. Or an aircraft carrier. That's
the thing about India. Let me use India for a great example. India is a unique situation because the reason the government desperately wanted digital money wasn't necessarily their primary purpose was not to try to put everybody on a digital system. Primary purpose is that Indians as a whole, their history going back hundreds, if not thousands of years, was they kept their own money, of course, in gold. They wear their wealth on chains, gold chains, but they also keep their money outside of banks. If you keep your money outside of banks, then there is no capital available to build businesses. And so India as an economy was completely stagnant. And so they desperately needed to find some way to get money put in so that they could be used as capital to then start growing the business, growing their economy. The people themselves were more than content to live in second world squalor. But the Indian government desperately needed to get up and move to the 21st century type thing, especially as they were part of the BRICS and wanted China. Now, another thing that's really I want to bring up real quick is we're reaching ahead. These tariffs that Donald Trump is doing, it's interesting that a lot of economists will go back to the 1920s and Smoot-Hawley, oh, this is detrimental. It's going to bring about the Great Depression. Again, one of the reasons I love history and economics is you have to look at each era in its own way. The 1920s we still had colonialism. The British Empire was still big, but Europe as a whole was devastated from the destruction of World War I. They didn't have a lot of industry going. They were completely bankrupt. That's why the reparations were so harsh put on Germany. And the United States was big. Well, after a certain point, the United States had sold everything they needed to Europe to get them going, but there was no buyers. And since Europe was rebuilding their industry, they had to put in tariffs to protect this fledgling industry because the United States was suddenly so dominant. And that's when the tariff war came back and forth and led to economic destruction. Today, we have the World Trade Organization, and we have the fact that exports only make 12% of the United States economy, while China is 38%. The EU is much higher. So tariffs are already being put on by the EU. They're already being put on by China. If you go to Japan, you know how many U.S. cars you see?
None.
Virtually none, because they put so much import duties. See, a tariff is also known as an import duty, but they don't want to tell you that. And so what we're trying to do is we are trying to really put a little dent in them because it's going to hurt them more than us, except for the fact it's going to start hurting individuals, retailers, consumers like you and me, because prices are going to go up.
You know, this is one thing that I thought a really interesting way to look at. I never even thought of before. Doug said, he goes, import tariffs are like putting an embargo on yourself. You know, you're embargoing yourself from, you know, getting stuff, or certainly making it price competitive. So I that principle right there is very powerful. I never even thought of that. We're putting embargoes on our own purchasing.
And yeah, we're doing it because we're trying to force these companies to bring back and do industry in the United States. If you don't, there's two ways you can do, you know, the carrot and the stick: incentives, which is what the tax breaks were. And if they don't follow through and do what you need them to do, then you do coercion.
Yeah, okay?
That's what tariffs are, coercion.
Yeah, if they just got out of the way. I just, you know, freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? You know, if you want manufacturing to come here, well, you know, reduce the regulation, reduce the taxes, get out of the way. You know, the answer is yes. You don't need a form. I mean, you do that. America kicked the living crap out of everybody. I think they know this, you know, the bankers and the central planners, and but they don't want to take that. They know freedom's the answer, but they don't want to do it because it lessens their individual controls or something. We'll talk about that when we come back. There's some philosophy. There's something we're against. There's something going on. There's some kind of entity. There's some, you know, Sauron evil empire secret handshake club of something, you know, that has an opinion that's different from mine. And the promise of America was, you know, be away from that. And I can do what I want. Well, I'm not bothering anybody. We'll talk about it. From the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com. Okay, here's one thing. Bitcoin's taking a dump. It's down to now 8,700 or something. So I'm right. Going, I might want to buy some. You know, I get me some, and it's because I've been through this before. It keeps going up and down, up and down, up and down. What is the reasonings, you think, for the volatility here?
Oh, well, the SEC is now going to crack down. There was a court ruling yesterday, as well as the SEC making its judgment on the Bitcoin exchanges. The other thing is Coinbase, which is the, you know, largest U.S. Bitcoin exchange.
And here are all our customers' records.
Not only that, have they done that, they also are creating an ETF. Guess what? Coinbase now is going into financialization. And what you were saying about at the end of the last segment, the reason that businesses don't really care about coming back is because they discovered after the Fed started pumping in so much money that there's more money to be made by making money on money than there is making money on products and services. That's what it's all about.
I know, but this is quarterly thinking. This is they, them, those, bankers, central planning, kind of, you know, there's some people investing in the future. These are the entrepreneurs that are, you know, they see what's happened generationally or wealth in the future. And that's what we're up against like everybody else, China, Russia. I mean, they're investing into a whole different thing. And we're just, it's like they're, America and Americans are the whale carcass that the sharks are just beating the crap out of until there's nothing left, and they'll move on to something else. And the carcass, they just, they don't care.
Yeah, but there's an interesting caveat. When our ancestors came to America, primarily from Europe in the 1700s and 1800s, they were leaving an area of where empires were being tyrannical and starting to die. Well, the fact of the matter is the big tyranny in the world now today is the United States. So the future is our progeny are going to move over to Singapore, like Jim Rogers has. Yeah. They're going to move over to China. They're going to do that. That's where the new frontier is.
But okay? It could be. I mean, it's just one campaign. You know, one more. There'll be a Lovelution, Ron Paulish kind of young from out of Barbados that lived in his grandma's basement that had an idea and came up and leader of the world and freedom. And it's always from out of freaking nowhere when you have this kind of environment. Freedom will explode. I'm just, you know,
it will only just like it did in the revolution. The current system needs to reset.
Right. But can it be America? I mean, is it so ingrained that, you know, here we have the understanding and the definition and the heritage, or are we done? I mean, it might as well just move to something. All right, here we're coming.
We're done for now, but it doesn't mean that.
All right,
you
we're
know,
coming back. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix. Ernest Hancock.
Love ain't the same on the south side of town. You could look, but you ain't gonna find it around. It's the same old story, same old song and dance. It's the same old story, same old story, same old song and dance.
I've been seeing this over and over and over. I'm old enough to know that. Yeah, I've seen this before. Wrote a song about it, like, here you go. It's the same old story, all right? You know, this is, but there's always the breakout of freedom. There's always the inspiration. There's always someone. It's just public opinion. And when the masses have an opinion about, and we think this about that, why do you think they spend so much on youth mandatory indoctrination camps, a.k.a. government schools? Why do you think they spend so much? Hell, the Pentagon's got a propaganda budget of, you know, screwing with our heads. You know, why do they spend so much on the propaganda and the social justice warning and the university of you think this about that and we got an incentives of and everything? And I'm going, it's opinion that drives everything, in my opinion. So I'm like, Ken, you got tell me I'm wrong, man. It's not just people's opinion.
No, it's correct. I mean, these things have been going on, but guess what? They've been going on for at least 70 years.
You're going to say 70,000 or 7,000.
Well, you know, if you want to really go into that aspect, as Solomon says, there's nothing new under the sun. There have been empires and tyrannies and dictatorships and the fall of these empires and the rise of different types of things. You know, you got to remember, too, the United States, what was it called? It was called the Great Experiment. This type of government, representative government, had never been seen. It wasn't even created. It was thought of, philosophized in ancient Greece, but they were a pure democracy.
If America didn't exist, we would dream of her.
Exactly. But the problem goes back to, like I said, in a representative government, there's two important things. One, you must work for your freedom. And two, you must take responsibility for the actions that occur. Well, the people, you know, as one of the biggest, greatest things that the powers that be did was to get us off the gold system, the gold standard in the early 1960s. And by doing that, it was able to introduce inflation. Now you force the both parents to have to work. They have less time to raise their kids. That opens up the door for the state to come in and use the school systems to educate and indoctrinate your kids. See, it's all based on money. This is what I was talking about. Different policies and money will affect the society as a whole. Yeah. And most people usually can't go back to that certain point of when did this happen. This is why if you want to see pure freedom, it's not necessarily that cryptocurrencies alone, an unbacked fiat type of digital money is going to do this. What it's going to be is what has proven itself over 5,000 years. You can have gold and silver in some capacity, and guess what? China is reintroducing it potentially as early as 2 weeks from today.
Oh, they're going to have a gold back spray, an atomizer, a very dry martini, vermouth over some paper with gold or something? What are they doing?
They are introducing the yuan-denominated oil contract. It's the first oil contract since the petrodollar system was put in that's not dollar denominated.
Okay, so they're not using gold, they're using a commodity of oil.
Hold on, there's a gold part to it. what they're doing is that because the yuan is not internationalized, it's not fully recognized, it's only used in about 12-13% of all global transactions. If those countries, especially if we get OPEC to move away from the dollar and start selling their oil in this yuan contract, China is connecting their energy exchange to the Shanghai Gold Exchange and the Hong Kong Gold Exchange, and you can take your yuan proceeds and use them to buy physical gold. If you don't like the you're holding yuan, you can get gold. That's what's going to do behind
that. So it's kind of like a Federal Reserve, this silver note thing?
Yeah, it's like if you had the old gold and silver certificates, it's a promise to that you can take it to a bank and get that much in gold. This is what China is doing.
No, you don't go blazing over that. Now, you're saying I can take this one that now is the oil back of it's on the currency exchange of digital, whatever the hell they do. I go into a Chinese bank, boom, I plop 100, whatever the hell I put on there, and I say, give me my gold, and they give me gold?
Yes. But not in an individual bank. But see, here's where the certain things have been put into place. In that the Shanghai Gold Exchange, they have not allowed gold to leave the country. Okay. But what they did was they connected Shenzhen Gold Exchange, which is on the Chinese mainland, with Hong Kong, which is like the portal to the world. And
they're like across the water from each other. So,
exactly. You know. And you can then take your yuan to the Hong Kong gold exchange and then get the gold and take it to any country you want. But what's going to happen is countries aren't going to want to transport on an airplane gold back and forth. If they know intrinsically that they can always get that gold, it's the same reason that we would hold dollars prior to 1935. Because we have the promise of gold, and that's enough. That's the thing about, say, like a gold money. Your money is stored in gold. There's the promise of gold. You spend it as if it's dollars, but it's enough that you know that you can always have that gold delivered. It's the same reason why banning cash is so abhorrent, because the ability to go into a bank and get your money out of the bank, that freedom alone is enough for you to at least trust the monetary system. If you can't take your money out, then there's no trust.
Yeah, no, it's like it's your money, you just can't have it now. Or you can only have part of it. Or we need to surveil. Or we got to fill out a form. Or we got to ask you a question. We need a social security number. Hell, I got an ID to deposit in somebody else's account. I'm going, what the hell? Well, this kind of offerings, that's why half the planet, not even online yet. You have 3+ billion people. They're going to be online. They're going to have access to do banking. They're not going to have to give up a retina scan. They're going to have their own responsibility for their own banking, of their own private keys, their own whatever the heck. And they're going to be having these kinds of options, and they may build up into where they need more financial planning. They need to be able to interface with these different currencies. They're going to be able to from the palm of their hand. So I'm wondering how much these big banks and this, is this a transition to that? Are they going to interface with that?
Exactly. Look, the petro. When we closed the gold window in 71, all of a sudden we had the oil crisis. The OPEC nation said, "Hey, if your money's not backed by gold, we don't want this crap." And eventually, then Kissinger had to go over and sweeten the pot and create the petrodollar system. The other countries were, the reason we closed the gold window is because nobody trusted our money. France was demanding all the gold to be delivered. Here's the kicker. Is that as long as there's a gold window, and one of the interesting things, too, is there was a, I believe it was Koos Jansen had found this chart, and that the Chinese yuan for over a year has not been actually moving in tie with the dollar, which it used to do. It's been moving in tie with the price of gold. The reason why, if you take a look at gold price in dollars, it went up 5% last year. But the gold price in the yuan went up less than 1%. It wasn't that they were suppressing the price of gold. It's just that their currency now is tied to gold, and they're doing it in preparation. The important thing
they've been repatriating gold from all over the world.
They have close to 20,000-30,000 tons, and Russia has more. But they're not telling you straight off, in the official numbers how much they have. Here's the thing about it, that this gold trade note, and Jim Willey is a big advocate of, and he's been forecasting this for several years. Once the yuan denominated oil contract gains steam and gets a critical mass that a lot of OPEC nations are selling oil, and it's being bought in the yuan, as well as, you know, knowing it's backed by gold, then China is going to introduce on its Silk Road, as it expands it, every type of trade contract is going to be gold-backed trade note. We bring back a pseudo form of the gold standard, which will then solidify, it'll tamp down inflation, and it will stabilize trade and currencies for anybody who participates in that.
We've noticed this. It was years ago when they were trying to, they're putting an embargo, you can't buy anything Iran. And then India goes, you know, here's a few $100 million in gold. Can we get some at a discount? You are correct, sir. You may do that. Well,
and now these new sanctions on Iran can go over to China and sell their oil there.
Yeah, with a Silk Road bus stop, train stop, hyperloop stop of spaceport. And this is the U.S. is so thinking last century. As America, you know, man, you're picking a bad team there. America, you know, or our culture, or, you know, the light on the hill kind of thing. I'm good. Americans, man, we're all in. But this America Inc. thing, not so much. And it's going to be, but you're going to have Trump up there pounding his chest and having that, oh, damn it. Kim Jong grandson is like making peace and stuff. Yeah, I did that. Which maybe, you never know. But I'm just looking at, you got to find out where to put your wealth. It's going to be a lot different. The DailyEconomist.com, Ken Shorten. We'll be right back.
Don't worry about things you can't control.
There you go. Thank you. That was fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to get you back on a regular, man. You know, this is all good stuff. You got daily for me. Let's do it.
Sure. Yeah. Just give me a heads up when you want to do it or schedule it.
Yeah, Donna, she'll communicate with you. What's a good time of the month? You know, I mean, is it beginning of the month, end of the month? When do you think you got the most goodie?
Pretty much any day but Wednesday, because I do Angel Clark show.
Well, I mean, that's how we know about you. It's from Angel. That's right.
If you want to set a given day or week or whatever, and then also I'm usually open to if there's a big event that takes place and you just need me on for 15, 30 an hour.
Okay, tell you what, let's do. Let's see if this will work. We have James Corbett on every other Wednesday, right?
Okay.
So let's go ahead and Donna, try and schedule Ken for the off Wednesday, the other Wednesday. So we just kind of, you know, I have James one Wednesday, and then the next one will be Ken, then James and Ken. The 21st. Okay. And which hour is better for you, like this, the third hour of the show?
Yeah, because I'm out in Phoenix, so usually I wake up early.
You're in Phoenix? What the hell you're not doing in studio? Get your ass over here.
Well, there you go.
Let's do that.
Where's your studio at?
We are out of our home. It's in 51st Avenue in Greenway.
Okay, I'm in Surprise.
Okay, well, you know where it's at. We're in the, you know, the Sunburst Farm horse thing.
Okay.
And also right on the southeast, if you go to freedomsphoenix.com, our home address is at the bottom of every page. And I go, why do you do that? I go, because all the bad guys know where I live. You know, might as well have the good guys know. So you go to freedomsphoenix.com at the bottom. There's the address, 4886 West Port au Prince. It's one block south of Greenway and about four houses east of 51st Avenue.
So, that's not bad. I'm at Bell and 303, so.
Okay, I tell you what, if you'll come in studio, we'll do a whole day, just me and you.
We'll see what we can do.
All right, let's go ahead and do March 21st. Donna will set it up, and we'll try to get you in studio. And that way, because even if we just do the third hour, then we can just not worry about commercial interruption, and we can just do podcast after. That might be the way to go. You come, you're here at, well, then the time changes. Okay, so it won't be 8 to 9. Yeah, it'll be 8 to 9, because it's not 9 to 10 then, right, Donna? Yeah, that's what you're saying. Okay, so we do 8 to 9. You're not having to get up too awful early. And then after the end of the show, then we don't got to worry about commercials, and we can just yak it until you're boring.
Sounds good.
All right, Donna's going to hook that up. Wednesday, March 21st, 8 to 9, come in studio. We'll go long, and we'll get all earnified.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, thanks a lot, Ken. That was fun. I've been looking forward to having a relationship with you. It's awesome.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, peace.